today on Richard Ellis Talks.
If God cares for the birds, how much more you? What are you facing? What's your challenge? What's your giant? Are you better than a raven or more in value? Let me tell you something. I'm not saying God didn't care about animals, but Jesus didn't shed his blood to save a raven. He did it to save a wretch like me. That's why he did it, and I don't deserve it.
You're listening to Richard Ellis Talks with Richard Ellis. Richard's style is unlike anyone else, where he shares the life-changing message of the gospel in a way that's real, refreshing, focused, and fun. We know that life is pretty challenging these days, but these talks will help you meet those challenges head-on with biblical truth, encouragement, and direction. Now, if you're not able to stick around with us for all of today's talk, you can always listen to, download, and even share this entire message with a friend right from our website, richardellis.com. So, let's jump right in with today's talk. Here is Richard Ellis.
Go to Numbers chapter 13. The context here is this familiar story, believe it or not, to a lot of people about, you know, God's people leaving Egypt and the Pharaoh thing. Maybe you've seen a movie about this, a cartoon. There's a lot of different stuff that's been out there about this. But very briefly, Moses goes in to deliver his people. All the plagues hit. You know, Pharaoh says, get out of here, get them out of here, just go. They leave. And they get out, and all the things that happened between them getting to this place, they get out there, and they're on the verge of going into this quote-unquote promised land, this place that God has told them, it's yours. Now, it's not that there's not going to be some challenge getting there, but I'm going to show you today, hopefully, how that some things just don't change. There are all kind of people in the world. Some people who see, you know, the glass half empty, the cliche there, some half full. It isn't even about that, because that's just a glass of milk or water. This is about what God says and what he can do. So let's dive in here at Numbers chapter 13, verse 1. And there's some amazing things right here in the first three verses. And the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, send men to spy out the land of Canaan, which I am giving to the children of Israel. Now, guys, when God says something, it's a big deal. And God says, Moses, send these guys in to spy out this land that I promised you. I am giving it to you. It's yours. It's a done deal. Now that sounds like a done deal. It is yours. It's a gift. It's done. From each tribe of their fathers, you shall send a man. And look at this next phrase. Everyone a leader among them. He told Moses, you got this land, and I'm telling you to pick one guy from every tribe that is a recognized leader. These are not flakes. These are not just some guy they drew straws and pulled out. Each tribe had to say, okay, we're going to pick our guy. Everybody knows this guy's a leader, and we want him to be one of the spies that's capable, that's qualified to go in and assess the situation. So this bunch of 12 that ends up gathering are powerhouse men. These are recognized by the entire group of capable spies, assessors to go in and see what's up. So Moses sent them from the wilderness of Paran, according to the command of the Lord, all of them who were heads of the children of Israel. These are leaders. Verse 4. And it goes on here. Now these were the names from the tribe of Reuben. Shammua, the son of Zakur. And what's a little embarrassing here is it names these guys, and then it says who their daddy was. And you'll see why this is not a good thing later. I mean, this is so-and-so, the son of somebody. And we've been called sons of different things in our lives, I'm sure. But this is supposed to be a great thing. Right here. So he goes through this whole list, names all these 12 guys and their tribes. And it gets down to the very, let's go down to verse 16. These are the names of the men whom Moses sent to spy out the land. And Moses called Hoshea, the son of Nun, Joshua. So he called him, instead of Hoshea, Joshua. Then Moses sent them to spy out the land of Canaan and said to them, go up this way into the south and go up into the mountains and see what the land is like, whether the people who dwell in it are strong or weak. Few or many, whether the land they dwell in is good or bad, whether the cities they inhabit are like camps or are they like strongholds, fortified cities, whether the land is rich or fertile or poor, whether there are forests or not. Then he says, be of good courage. He says, go find out what we got. It wasn't to go see if we could take it. Go see what we got and come back and tell us what this great thing is God has given us and see, we're going to have to go take it, obviously. We're going to have to go in there and conquer these people, but find out what's going on, assess it, and come back. So they went up and spied out the land from the wilderness of Zin as far as Rehob, near the entrance of Hamath. And they went up through the south and came to Hebron, Ashima, and it goes through all these places they went, the valley of Eshcol, verse 23. There they cut down a branch with one cluster of grapes. They carried it between them on a pole. There was such a huge cluster of grapes, they had to get a pole to hang this thing on. This is a fertile place. They also brought some of the pomegranates and figs. The place was called the Valley of Eshcol because of the cluster which the men of Israel cut down there. And they returned from spying out of the land after 40 days. And this is important later, you'll see. 40 days they went from place to place checking this thing out. What do we got? Now they departed and came back to Moses. They left this land, came back to Moses and Aaron and all the congregation of the children of Israel in the wilderness of Paran at Kadesh. They brought back word to them and to all the congregation and showed them the fruit of the land. Now listen what happens. These are the leaders. Then they told him and said, "We went to the land where you sent us. It truly flows with milk and honey, and this is its fruit." And this is where it gets screwy. Verse 28, the first word. Nevertheless. Now, I'm not telling you there's not a time for caution in our lives, but I'm going to tell you what'll kill a company, what'll kill a family, what'll kill any venture you undertake, especially if it's for God, is one person, in this case 10 of them, who out of nowhere go, "Now, this is all good, but nevertheless, but I don't think we can do it." These guys come in and start putting this negative junk in there after God has already spoken. Verse 28, "Nevertheless, the people..." The land is great, but the people, you know what you're afraid of and I'm afraid of more than anything? It's not circumstances, basically. It's people. And I've lived in this town long enough that I can remember driving through this town when I was in a whole nother frame of mind and I drove by things and I would be afraid. And what was going on in me, the city hadn't changed that much. It's me. The people haven't changed as much. It's me. And where it used to be, I'd drive down a street in fear. Now I drive down the street going, "Man, I can vaguely remember that terrible feeling I had when I used to go by here, but wow, I feel better now." The place hasn't changed, it's the people. And they said, "The people who dwell in the land are strong. The cities are fortified and very large. Moreover, we saw the descendants of the Anak there." And you'll see down in a moment, these are giants. These are huge people. I mean, it's just a whole nation of NBA players. Verse 29, "The Amalekites dwell in the land of the south, the Hittites, the Jebusites." They go on and on saying who's there. Then verse 30, now that's these 10 guys who have said, "No way, we can't take it. They're too big. It's too big a problem." Then Caleb, verse 30, "quieted the people before Moses and said," now listen to this, guys, I'm telling you, be one of these people. I'm not saying we don't need cautious people around that give us some reason and think through things. That's not what I'm talking about. But be a person who when God speaks, you say, "You know what? I don't care what I see. I don't care what the reality in some cases is. This isn't positive thinking. This is powerful thinking. If God says it's ours, let's go." And Caleb says this, he quieted the people and said, "Let us go up at once and take possession, for we are well able to overcome it." Let's go now. Enough talk about how they're big there on that. God gave it to us. Let's go take it now. But the men who had gone up with him said, "We are not able to go up against the people, for they are stronger than we." Now, what's their basic problem? They're not looking to God for strength. They're saying, "We can't do it based on who we are." Let me tell you something. If you live the rest of your life today, beginning today and the rest of your life, doing things that you can do or not do, you're not going to get very far on this planet. And frankly, I don't even like to ask God to do something or get involved with something that when it happens, it can be explained that I did it. You know why? Because then I'm going to get the credit for having done it. If you're going to ask God to do something and test him, say, "You know what, God, you and me can get this done, but I can't get this done without you, so I'm going to ask for this." So when it happens, even I will know and everybody around me will go, "There's no way that happened, but God did it." No way it happened. It's not explainable any other way. Ask for something majestic, miraculous, something beyond yourself. So these other guys say, "They're strong, we can't do it." And they gave the children of Israel a bad report of the land which they had spied out, saying, "The land through which we have gone as spies is a land that devours its inhabitants." They're cannibals. They'll eat us, scaring the people. "And all the people whom we saw in it are men of great stature. There we saw the giants, the descendants of Anak, came from the giants. And we were like grasshoppers in our own sight, and so we were in their sight." Now let me tell you something. There's at least 600,000 of these people. Moses sends 12 of them out. The 12 come back, and 10 of them infect the entire mob with negative, we can't do it. Now look at verse 1 of chapter 14. So all the congregation lifted up their voices. Look what these 10 guys did to this mob of people. All the congregation lifted up their voices and cried, and the people wept that night. So there's this wailing sound all night long. Verse 2. And all the children of Israel complained against Moses and Aaron. It takes 10 people to infect the entire crowd. Don't be one of those people. Don't be that person at church. Don't be that person at work. Don't be that person in your family. Some of you ladies prayed all your life that your husband will be a godly man, and he starts putting it into gear and taking off and tries to do something right, and you go, well, you didn't do that very good, did you? And you punch him. You shut him down when he's just making a move. Encourage him. Don't complain. Don't criticize what he's trying to do. These two guys coming back, we can take it. 10 say, no, we can't. And it gets this mob completely freaked out. Verse 2, all the children of Israel complained against Moses and Aaron. The whole congregation said to them, if only we had died in the land of Egypt, or if only we had died in the wilderness. Why has the Lord brought us to this land to fall by the sword that our wives and children should become victims? Would it not be better for us to return to Egypt? So they said to one another, let us select a leader and return to Egypt. They had a leader. They had Moses. He had gotten them that far. They're saying, let's pick us a new leader that'll lead us where? Backwards. Man, don't you want to be that guy? I was chosen to take people back where they came from, where things were terrible and where they're going to die. That sounds like a great honor. Then Moses and Aaron fell on their faces before all the assembly of the congregation of the children of Israel. But Joshua, the son of Nun, and Caleb, who were among those who had spied out the land, ripped their clothes. That was a sign of grief in that day. And they spoke to all the congregation of the children of Israel, saying, the land we pass through to spy out is an exceedingly good land. If the Lord delights in us, then he will bring us into this land and will give it to us, a land which flows with milk and honey. Only do not rebel against the Lord, nor fear the people of the land, for they are our bread. Their protection has departed from them. These guys had enough faith to say, you know what? They may be big, they may be bad, they may look like they got it going on, but we got God. If we've got God, whatever protection they had is gone, because nobody can stand up against our God. Their protection has departed from them, and the Lord is with us. Do not fear them. I talk to people, you got bankruptcy court deals, you got relationship stuff, you're going into a divorce hearing, you're going into all kind of stuff, and it's bigger than you, it's badder than you, it's worse than anything you can imagine, and you look at it and it overwhelms you, and you say, I can't take this, I can't do anything about it. Go to somebody bigger than you and the problem and say, God, I can't deal with this, but I know you can. I can't even see it anymore. I'm emotionally involved in it. I can't be objective anymore. You got to help me see what you can do, not just what I can do, because I've run out of what I can do. And then you find your eyes open, God going, watch this, look at this, trust me, I can take care of anything. And doors open that were closed. Things happen that you never dreamed could happen because you look to him, not to yourself, and just at the problem. Don't be afraid of them, he says. Now look at verse 10. You think it's not expensive to take a stand? And all the congregation said to stone them with stones, kill them. We don't want to hear any positive, any God thinking. We've decided we're out of here. Now the glory of the Lord, and this seems like a little afterthought thing in verse 10, but I'm going to tell you the most important thing that probably happens in this whole narrative is right here at the end of verse 10. Moses has spoken, Aaron has spoken, they're down on the ground, Caleb's tried again, Joshua's tried again, and the people are saying, let's stone them, kill them, we've heard enough, they're trying to get us killed, and they go to stone these guys, and the last part of verse 10, now the glory of the Lord appeared in the tabernacle of meeting before all the children of Israel. It happened to Jesus on the Mount of Transfiguration. Moses got hit with it when he was up getting the Ten Commandments. It is this thing. Here it was a tangible, visible, audible, something happened in this tabernacle. The place, it was like radioactive, and it shut them down. Verse 11, then the Lord said to Moses, how long will these people reject me? And how long will they not believe me with all the signs which I have performed among them? Now, let me ask you a question. What's it going to take? What is God going to have to do for you to believe that he's going to take care of you? I'm not saying look forward to the fears of the future. I'm saying stop right now and look back and say, okay, well, let me take inventory. You know, he got me through that. I screwed that up and he bailed me out of that. This should have happened. That should have happened. He got me through all this stuff. And then you get right here, and it's about going forward, living today and going to the future. And you see, but God, what if you screw up? He says, well, I didn't screw up back here, so what makes you think I'm going to now? And God reasons with Moses. He says, what's it going to take? How long will they not believe me with all this stuff that I've done? And he can go back and rename it. Getting them through seas that part, and they go across on dry land, all the plagues, Pharaoh saying, get them out of here, all this stuff. Verse 12, he says, I'm done, basically. I will strike them with the pestilence and disinherit them, and I will make of you a nation greater and mightier than they. I'll start all over again, Moses. I'm done with them. And Moses said to the Lord, well, if you do that, then the Egyptians are going to think you can't do what you set out to do. Moses starts reasoning with God, says you got to take care of them. You got to bail them out. And if you keep down, verse 15, now if you kill these people as one man, then the nations which have heard of your fame will speak, saying, because the Lord was not able to bring this people to the land which he swore to give them, therefore he killed them in the wilderness. And now I pray, let the power of my Lord be great, just as you have spoken, saying, the Lord is long-suffering and abundant in mercy, forgiving iniquity and transgression, but he by no means clears the guilty, visiting the iniquity of the fathers on the children of the third and fourth generation. Pardon the iniquity of this people, Moses says, I pray, according to the greatness of your mercy, just as you have forgiven this people from Egypt even until now. Then the Lord said, I have pardoned according to your word. I'll have mercy. But truly as I live, all the earth shall be filled with the glory of the Lord. Verse 22, look at this. Because all these men who have seen my glory and the signs which I did in Egypt and in the wilderness and have put me to the test now these 10 times and have not heeded my voice, they certainly shall not see the land which I swore to their fathers, nor shall any of those who rejected me see it. But my servant Caleb, because he has a different spirit in him and has followed me fully, I will bring into the land where he went, and his descendants shall inherit it. You know who made it into the promised land? Joshua, Caleb, and everybody who didn't believe God had mercy, but they died in the wilderness. They never saw it. Now, I want you to look over at verse 34. Does anybody know why they spent 40 years in the wilderness? The answer is in verse 34. According to the number of the days in which you spied out the land, 40 days, for each day you shall bear your guilt 1 year, namely 40 years, and you shall know my rejection. You say, well, what difference does a day make? Every day made a year in this calculation. You say, well, I'm only going to do my thing today. It won't have any consequence. Back then it mattered. I'm just taking one. I'm taking a day off, God. I don't want to do your deal today. You know what? It'll cost you. You can get in more trouble in one day. You can get in trouble in 30 seconds. You can set something in motion in 30 seconds. It will change your life forever. And you can figure that out on your own. Flip over the New Testament very quickly. Luke chapter 12. We've done with the giants. Can we take them or not? Let's look at the ravens. Verse 22, Luke 12. This is Jesus speaking. Then he said to his disciples, therefore I say to you, do not worry about your life, what you will eat, nor about the body, what you will put on. Life is more than food, and the body is more than clothing. There's more to life than eating and getting buying clothes. You say, well, certainly there is. You got cars you could buy. You got trips you could take. You know, there's a lot more to life. That's not what he meant either. These people were so preoccupied and obsessed with just finding food and clothing, where literally the goal of the day was to find a meal. And Scripture applies to those people. He says, you're concerned about finding something to wear, literally clothes to put on and something to eat today. Not planning for tomorrow, today to feed your family. God says, don't worry about that. You say, well, that's easy for you to say. You're in heaven with, you know, everything you want. I'm down here starving, cold. What am I supposed to do? He says, don't worry. Don't worry about your life, what you will eat, nor about the body, what you will put on. Life is more than food, and the body is more than clothing. Verse 24, consider the ravens. And Jesus is out speaking when he gives this discourse, and he's outside, and I'm sure right there somewhere by there are birds. You know, it'd do you good to stop sometimes. You know, I used to travel. Little church I pastored in the country had about a 4-hour drive, and some nights I'd fall asleep, wake up on a bridge, that kind of thing. I'd pull over. I was just too tired, and I'd get out. It'd be cold or something, and I'd lay on the hood of the car, lean up against the windshield, and I'd look up in the sky. I'm going to tell you something. That'll do something for you. The fool says in his heart, there's no God. That's what the Bible says. You can't look up there and not believe there's a God. I'd count falling stars. I remember I'd say, okay, God, just one more. Give me one more. Praying for falling stars. They let silly. You know what? They'd go flying across. And we'll tell you what was awesome about that. That had to be set in motion a long time ago. is that star I prayed for and I saw got burned up a long time ago. And there I was on the hood of my car. And somewhere in time, God said, okay, I'm going to launch this one, however long ago it had to launch. So when he gets right there on the hood of that car, it'll go by. You say, well, that's silly. You don't know my God. See, to some of you, he's God, and that's great. But to some of you, he's Father. He's Daddy. And there are things I do for my children that don't make any sense. Not rational. Only motivated by love. And you know, that's what he is. That's how he is. And out of nowhere, he'll surprise you sometime. He'll do something you just can't explain. And you go, wow, I didn't deserve that. Pretty amazing. If he can take care of birds, guys, he can take care of you. And look what Jesus says to him. He says, look at the ravens. They don't sow or reap. They're not out here gathering seed, digging up little holes, putting seed in the ground, going to the next one, digging up a hole, putting seed in the ground, and then waiting, you know, and then going out and biting them down, harvesting the stuff. You know, they're not doing that. He says, they don't sow nor reap, which have neither storehouse nor barn. They don't have portfolios. They don't have savings account. I'm not against these things. They got nothing. They got today. And God feeds them. And then the great statement of how much more value are you than the birds? And my contention is there are a lot of people walking around thinking God cares more about the birds than he does you. And that's the problem. Well, sure, God cares about birds, but he didn't care about little old me. And look what I've done. Look where I've been. I've screwed up. There shouldn't be any hope or any mercy for me. Now ask yourself that question. If God cares for the birds, how much more you? What are you facing? What's your challenge? What's your giant? Are you better than a raven? More in value? Let me tell you something. I'm not saying God didn't care about animals, but Jesus didn't shed his blood to save a raven. He did it to save a wretch like me. That's why he did it. And I don't deserve it. I don't deserve falling stars, but I really don't deserve his life and his blood. And his burial and his resurrection, all that he went through to get me a life I don't deserve. And then he goes on, he says, and which of you by worrying can add one cubit to your stature? Are you going to become a giant by worrying? No, you're not going to grow a bit. Worrying is not the answer. Now I admit, guys, it's the craziest story I've ever read, ever even heard of. The Bible says about itself that the gospel, this life, death, burial, resurrection story of Jesus, is foolishness. That's what it says about itself. That the proclaiming, me getting up here and telling you a story about Jesus, the Bible admits about itself that this is absolute foolishness to those who are perishing, but it says to those who believe, it is the power of God unto salvation.
Richard will be back in a moment to wrap up today's talk. But first, I want to share a couple thoughts with you. Let's be honest. Real life isn't about living some highlight reel for others to see. Most people have deep hurts, questions, and struggles. We get it and want to help you in any way we can. So let's keep this conversation going. Give us a call at 855-6-RICHARD or connect with us at our website, richardellis.com. You can even put in your prayer request right there on the prayer wall so others can pray for you as well. Call us at 855-6-RICHARD or online at richardellis.com. And now let's get back to Richard with a final word on today's show.
You literally can reach out the hands of your heart and say, you know what, God? This is the craziest thing. I don't get it. I got friends who say they get it. I watch them. I've never gotten it. But for some bizarre reason, it's like my eyes have been opened. My heart's been opened. My ears have been unstopped. And I just think and get it. I don't understand it, but I get it. It's like some power has intervened and I get it. Now, how do you get it? I've had it happen in the last couple of weeks a few times. You say a simple prayer. You don't have to have your eyes closed. If you're driving, it's better that way anyway. But it's a simple prayer where you say, God, I've screwed up. I'm a sinner. I'm part of the reason you died on that cross. I got you there. And it's my stuff you covered. And I'm living without you, and I'm going to die without you unless something changes. And I'm telling you, God, I got nothing to offer. I have nothing to bring you. I have some money, but you don't want my money. I've been a kind of good guy, but I've been a screwy guy too. I got nothing to give you, God. So I'm coming empty-handed, and I'm saying, you say you love me, you say you know me, and in spite of all that, you still love me. I got to have what you're offering. You're offering me eternal life, abundant life, forgiveness of sin. I need forgiveness real bad. And some people don't know me, but you know me, and there's a few people know what I've done, where I've been, what I've said. I need help. I'm reaching out the hands of my heart, and I'm going to let you love me. I'm going to let you come live in me. I'm taking this gift of eternal life that you offer, and I want you to change me from the inside out. I want a new brain. I want a new heart. I want a new life. I want a clean slate. I want a fresh start. And if that's what you got, God, if that's what you're offering, I'm a taker. You say, but that's foolishness. You know what? You'll never know till you try. Someone's knocking at the door. Someone's ringing that bell. Do him a favor. Open the door and let him in.
Thanks for listening today to Richard Ellis Talks. We're confident that the program blessed you, and we want to hear about it. One way is to give us a call and let us know. The number is 855-6-RICHARD. Another way is to drop us an email. Jump on over to our website, richardellis.com, and click on the Connect tab at the top. We'd love to hear from you. And while you're there at the website, it's the best way to stay up to date with all the audio and video talks with Richard, post on the prayer wall, how you can join the team, and even a place where you can ask any questions you have to get straight biblical answers. Check it out, richardellis.com. Finally, we're grateful when you help us with the cost to bring you this program. Call us at 855-6-RICHARD, or you can contribute through the website richardellis.com. That's 855-6-RICHARD or richardellis.com. Until next time, thanks for listening to Richard Ellis Talks.